Do you have a deep connection with your culture of origin? If you do have that connection, do you strive to embrace those individual and communal histories, nurture creative expression, and advocate for a more equitable and compassionate world? Today's guest does just that and will bring you her journey of pursuing healing across generations, the resilience of the human spirit, and the unbreakable bonds of community. Welcome to Unleash Your Inner Creative with Lauren LaGrasso. I'm Lauren LaGrasso. I'm an award-winning podcast host and producer, singer-songwriter, public speaker, and creative coach. This show sits at the intersection of creativity, mental health, self-development, and spirituality, and it is meant to give you tools to love, trust, and know yourself enough to claim your right to creativity and pursue whatever it is that's on your heart. In the month of April, Unleash Your Inner Creative is collaborating with my alma mater, Michigan State University, and their student-run radio station, Impact 89 FM. Each week this month, you'll hear from a remarkable MSU student or alumni who is doing great creative work out in the world and or on campus. These episodes will air both on Impact 89 FM as well as on the usual Unleash Your Inner Creative podcast feed. If you're listening on the radio right now, hi, welcome to Unleash. I am so happy to have you in the creative community. If you like what you hear, you can go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, look up Unleash Your Inner Creative and subscribe to learn more about the show and hear more episodes. You can also rate and review there. If you're a regular Unleash listener, you can check out The Impact at impact89fm.org for more info on the station, their shows, and to listen live. Today's guest is Roxy Sproul, also known by her Ojibwe name, Bejigo Nodenkwe. She is a proud citizen of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians. She's also a graduating senior at Michigan State University studying social work, Indigenous studies, and race and ethnicity in the United States. Roxy serves several leadership roles inside her campus community, including leading a research lab regarding racial and ethnic representation in U.S. history textbooks and leading the North American Indigenous Student Organization. Outside of campus, Roxy serves as a board member on the Michigan Indian Education Council, is a 2023 National UDAL Scholar, and is a National Building Communities of Hope Fellow for the Center of Native American Youth. As a former foster youth, Roxy is a passionate advocate for Indian child welfare and education policy reform. Her advocacy focuses on uplifting the needs and centering the cultural connections of Indigenous youth and communities. She ultimately hopes to continue learning how to balance love with systemic anger for the sake of collective healing through a wide variety of creative forms of advocacy. That is probably my favorite thing about Roxy and why I wanted to have her on the show. Our world is very individualistic instead of community-centered, which is not really the Native American way. But how Roxy has built her community and made true change through love and connection and through harnessing anger to actually create more love and connection, that is something we can all learn from and utilize in our own lives and creative journey. So from today's chat, you'll learn how to embrace your cultural identity, the transformative power of creative endeavors, how to overcome adversity, use laughter as medicine, and much more. One final thing, in going through the post-production of this episode, it became clear to me that our amazing guest actually had her window open during the recording. And so you will hear a lot of cool ambient noises. You actually hear some birds at one point, but at one point you also hear a siren. And so we're just keeping it really real. I should have reminded her to shut any windows. But anyway, I just wanted to let you know in case you're like, what is that siren sound? Or why does it sound like there's a car on the microphone? Anyway, enjoy the ambient noise. You'll feel like you're right there with Roxy and me. And let's get ready to unleash. Okay, now here she is, Roxy Sproul. Roxy, I am so thrilled to have you on this show because I view your journey as incredibly creative. I think activism is actually one of the most creative things you can do because it requires you to envision a better world that does not yet exist. And I think we need really creative solutions to the world's problems. And so I'm so thrilled and honored to have somebody here who is being creative in that way every single day. So thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate you asking me to do this. And I'm excited to talk about all the things we're going to talk about.
You're amazing. And, you know, I always say that our purpose is found at the midpoint between our greatest pain and our greatest joy. And I wonder if that rings true for you. And if so, what you would say your purpose is.
I would say that definitely rings true for me. But I also think all of the lows and all of the highs, like, matter. And all the pain matters just as much as, like, all of the excitement and happiness that I've experienced. And I don't think any of it outweighs each other. And I don't know if there's necessarily a specific, like, midpoint for me. Throughout my life, I've had a lot of, like, highs and lows in terms of emotion. I personally think it's all important. And then in terms of, like, the second question, my purpose, I was given a lot of gifts by my ancestors and by my community and by the aunties who continue to teach me all the things that I've learned, and by friends. And a lot of, like, feminine energy has really helped me through the things that I have gone through, both the highs and lows and the midpoints of things. I would say that one of my purposes is to act as a vessel for the people who need it. So, like, to be able to speak from my heart in a way that empowers other people to be able to speak from theirs. Like, this past weekend, I've been sewing with my friends, and I'm, like, teaching them, like, I'm the first person to teach them how to actually sew. And I'm a beginner myself, but, like, being able to show people ways that they can, like, feel agency in their lives, whether that's something creative or that's something more detrimental that's happening in their life, or whether that's something just more joyous and exciting and, like, feeling proud of themselves for accomplishing something that they wanted to accomplish. I think that is my true role, is to be that advocate for people.
I love that. I think people mistake it a lot of the times. They think, like, oh, my purpose is to be a doctor, or my purpose is to do... But really, it is something broad like that. And then everything can go through it. And you can be fulfilling your purpose while you're just sitting there breathing. You can be fulfilling your purpose while you're having a conversation, while you're sewing. Like, there's so many different ways to fulfill your purpose when we don't make it this weird binary job-based thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because at the end of the day, if we were to get rid of our jobs, get rid of capitalism, get rid of all the things that we know, all we have really is our hearts and our spirits and our minds. Like, that's truly what we have. So when people identify just with a position that they're in, as opposed to what their heart is and who they truly are and what their spirit truly is, I think there'll be some struggles later in life, and it might be harder to process them, because once you know what your spirit is and know what your energy is and know that part of yourself, it can help you further in life. And once you know those traits that you have, that you're, like, totally confident that you have, it can, like, literally change your life. Like, recently, actually, over the past year, because I've had a lot of highs and lows over the past year, one of my, like, closest friends taught me this, like, exercise, and it was, like, absolutely life-changing. She asked me to think about one trait that I have that I 110,000% know that I have. Like, the first word that came to my mind is courage.
That is a good one. That is so clear.
But I know that I have that. She was like, oh, that's a good one. And then she said, now imagine somebody coming up to you, or a group of people coming up to you and looking at you and saying that you're the most cowardly person they've ever met in their life. Or saying that you absolutely do not have courage, all that kind of stuff. Imagine somebody coming up and saying none of that is true. How would you feel, and how would you react to them? My first thought was, like, I would be very confused, angry. I'd probably just walk away, like, because I know who I am. And then she goes, exactly. That's exactly it. And now you're a whole human being with so many different life experiences, so much different variety of lived experience, so many things yet to happen. Imagine all of the other traits that you haven't yet decided, yep, I 110,000% believe this of myself. And imagine a point where you get there, where you have all of these hundreds of traits, where you can say that, and if anyone comes up to you and they tell you, no, you're not that, you're not courageous, you're not compassionate, you're not funny, whatever, and you can just look at them and say, I know you're wrong, because I know 110,000% that those are the things that I am. And so I'm not even going to invest energy towards arguing about it, because I know my truth. That was probably one of the most beautiful life-changing lessons, one of them, that I have ever been taught in my life, because it completely changed the outlook on my own self-confidence, on the own things that I'm giving out into the world, on the own things that I'm, like, creating, the things that I'm owning. Once someone puts that in perspective for you, when you think you don't have any control in your life, or you don't, you know, don't have that agency in your life over especially the bad things in your life, and then you realize, hey, actually, I have control over how I perceive myself, and have control over how I can am going to continue to present myself and interact with the world around me, it helps because you at least feel in control here in your heart, mind, and spirit, right? Even if it's over one little trait.
So brilliant. The fact that you have so much wisdom as such a young person, like I was so attached to what I did as a 21-year-old, even unfortunately as like a 32-year-old. I think that's when I finally started realizing, oh, maybe I'm not what I do and I'm not my achievements. Maybe I'm just me. I don't know. I feel like your generation is starting to really break that belief pattern that was so deeply ingrained in so much of us, but it's deeply in the stew of the culture that so many of us were raised in. So it's hard to shed that. But that exercise, it's so powerful because it's true. When somebody says something mean to you about yourself and you know it's not true, it doesn't affect you as much. So it's so beautiful that you're starting to actually build up, like, how can I actively build up my self-esteem and self-worth with these different aspects of who I am? But the courage piece is so clear from knowing your story. And I would really be honored to share a little bit about your story. So I wonder if you would talk about your upbringing in early life, because I know it directly impacted what you do today and how you show up in the world.
Yes, of course. So when I was 5 years old, I was removed from my biological mother. She's Ojibwe. She's the Ojibwe side of my family. I was removed from her custody when I was 5 and placed with my paternal non-native grandmother. And originally, my grandmother was my foster parent for a short bit, and then she became my legal guardian for about 13 years. So yeah, I grew up pretty much in the foster care system or in the child welfare system, however way you want to look at it. I identify as a foster kid because it's just easier to say. But when I moved in with my grandma, it was a little difficult because there were a lot of parts of me that I had to fight for. And there were a lot of parts of me that I had a lot of internal battles with. And one of them was my indigeneity. It wasn't until I was a bit older in high school. My aunt was the Native education director for the school district I grew up in, which I'm really grateful to have had her. But I didn't really start connecting with her until I was in high school. And then she really was one of those first people who helped me realize that I'm not as crazy as I think about the things that I'm like crazy about, you know?
What did you feel crazy over when you were little?
I just felt like none of the things that I had been experiencing, like it was all my fault. Like I felt like it was all my fault, everything I was doing, that I was a bad kid. The way I see things now is like, I don't think any youth is bad. First of all, in our culture and in our communities, we view youth with like the highest regard. They are the one of the closest beings to Creator. And so when I look back at like my younger self, I feel so sad because of all the like internal battles she was dealing with, all of the abuse that she was going through. It makes me sad because it's like, how are people even capable of putting a label of a bad kid onto a 5-year-old for traits that she doesn't even know she has yet, or traits that she can't even control yet? When I was little and in foster care too, I had a Native American outreach worker named Wendy. And she was absolutely amazing. She was one of those people, too, who really, really helped me tap into that creative energy to, like, let things out. I used to be, like, a really angry kid because when you're a traumatized child, like, that's one of the ways it manifests is through anger. Plus, when you're so small and you have all this, like, all these things have happened to you, it's, like, so much weight on you. It's, like, you don't know how to let it out. And my social worker, she would take me out to the library and we would paint. One day we were painting flowers and I started getting so frustrated because like her, an adult woman, me as a 5-year-old, like my painting didn't look like hers. Like my flowers weren't as good as hers. And I started like getting upset and angry. And I was like, why don't my flowers look as good as yours? She said to me, flowers aren't perfect, so you don't have to be either. In that moment, it was like, okay, I really don't have to be this certain way that different members of my family and different people in my life want me to be. I can just exist with all of my flaws and all of the things. And I didn't realize that lesson in the moment because I was like 5. But as I've gotten older, yeah, I've started to like reflect back on those times with her and like, you know, like that is so true. And it like really helped me to like shake that perfectionism because people are going to want you to be a certain way and you can turn one way and they all want you to act this way, turn the other way. They all want you to act this way. When I think back about that time, like I really needed to hear that. But unfortunately, when I was 11, she committed suicide. She was only in my life for a short period of time, but she was really one of the first who helped me maintain, you know, somewhat of a connection to my culture, especially through art. And then when she passed away, it was like a really difficult time. It was like right when I was going into middle school.
Tough times.
Exactly. Like sixth grade, literally the worst. And yeah, I had a lot of like identity shifts throughout that time. And then once I got into high school, I started going to my aunt's office, and she's also Ojibwe. Yeah, and I would just go in there and just talk to her. And the more I went in there, I started going in there pretty much all day, every day. I was like in her office, just like doing homework or talking, making things. Like I was doing so many things, like just because I wanted to be in her company. Sometimes we wouldn't even talk, you know, we'd just sit with each other. Because of all the things that I had went through, I started like, you know, second guessing different parts of my identity. And she helped me realize that all those parts of myself are okay. So I'm not this like awful bad kid anymore. I'm actually just a human being that has highs and lows, just as everyone else does. And then around that same time, I started connecting with my other aunt, who's not Native, and she also helped reinforce those lessons I learned from my other aunt. I graduated high school in June 2020, and I was going through a really rough like home situation. Like, it was not great. It was very abusive.
And you were with your grandma at the time?
Yes. I called both my aunts up, and I was like, I don't know what to do. And then both my aunts, they talked, and then my aunt, who's not Native, she called me, and she was like, you're gonna come live with me. And I was like, cool. I'm from the Upper Peninsula, and I moved for the first time across the bridge.
You became a troll like the rest of us.
Exactly, a troll. I'm not a Uber anymore. Now I'm like converting into my troll life. Like, that's
hashtag
like,
troll life.
4 years. Exactly. And yeah, I started living with her, and it was a really interesting experience, but I wanted to go back up north. The lake is my home. I really miss being by the lake. I miss biking because I love biking, like mountain biking. When I turned 18, I like just pretty much was like couch hopping at my friends' places. And honestly, that was one of the best experiences I've had. Like, it was the first time I had a sense of freedom in my life, while also being able to enjoy the beauty of the town I grew up in. And it was like the most freeing feeling ever. And that was also the same time when I changed my name legally. So ever since I was 5, I wanted to change my name because my mom named me after two dogs that she killed. When I moved in with my grandma, first day I moved in with my grandma, one of the things she taught me was to be proud of my name always. She started calling me Roxy from the first day that I lived with her, and it was always Roxy. And she was also one of those people who taught me that you don't have to love someone who's abusive to you. And then in reflecting on my childhood with her and reflecting on different things that had happened, I carry that, and I listen to the fact that she has told me that for years, because she has been that person sometimes in my life.
Right.
Yeah, when I came back up to the UP and was like couch hopping, I finally changed my name because I turned 18, and I finally changed it to Roxy legally. And I finally like became who I am. And that was like an absolutely affirming experience. And I changed my middle name to Mashkwaza Ikwe, which was one of the first Anishinaabe words that I learned that wasn't like dog or an animal or anything like that. It was like one of the first like words that I learned, and it means strong woman. Ever since then, I felt like more secure in myself, even in my lowest moments. Because again, I know who I am, and I'm proud of my name, you know, and I'm proud of that part of myself now.
I want to break down so many things from your story, but like, we've laughed a lot throughout you talking about some really painful, dark things. And I know you talk about how laughing is a survival tactic for you. Can you share about that?
Yes. I don't know where I found this. I don't know how exactly true it is, but I heard that laughter is a defense mechanism, like an instinct. It's one of those like instincts that we have as humans when we are in defense to like ward off predators. So I was like thinking about it, and I don't know how true that is. So like, I started thinking about, wow, if this is like a survival tactic or like defense mechanism, I have a really loud laugh. And I think about a lot of the aunties in my life, and you could probably think of a few even in your own family, people who have those loud, like guttural laughs. When I think about that, it's like there's a lot of things that the women in our communities, in communities of color, in Anishinaabe communities, in Ojibwe communities, in our own respective families, there's a lot of things that
our matriarchs have had to go through. Mm-hmm. And the fact that, you know, I carry an auntie laugh, that is an honor to me. In terms of laughter, too, I think it's such a powerful thing to bring people together. Every single day of my life, I want to be able to laugh, even through like the darkest things. Throughout my life, I have like really tried to make that a point, like in the way that I carry myself.
Sometimes I think we don't look at why we're fighting for what we're fighting for. Aren't we fighting for the opportunity to feel joy, to have a peaceful moment, to have a laugh? And if we're not allowing ourselves moments of that most beautiful part of being a human, then what's the point of the activism? Are we just fighting for more pain? I think we need the joy to incentivize us and replenish us so we can keep going.
100%. When I started realizing, so I've been very involved in advocacy throughout my undergraduate career and even before then. Mm-hmm. And once I started to realize that I was no longer laughing in the spaces that I should be with the people who I enjoyed being around and the people that I was supposed to be fighting with, once I started to realize I wasn't laughing as much in those spaces, I had to take a step back. And it turns out, genuinely, it was taking a physical toll on my body. My heart rate was extremely high. My blood pressure was very high. My cholesterol was very high. And it was because I wasn't engaging in reciprocal relationships in which I can have those laughing moments and have those fun moments with people who are fighting for the same things that I'm fighting for, right? Once I started taking a step back from some of those spaces and really thinking, okay, I'm going to be intentional about the spaces I'm sharing with others, I went to the doctor and everything's good now.
I believe that.
And there's so many different ways, to be involved in advocacy. I think a lot of people think that it is one way or a different way or whatever. It's like being, because I think there's a difference personally between activism and advocacy. Yeah. I think activism a lot of the time is more of a performative thing and it's more an external thing. But for me, advocacy is like working with people in like an internal way. It's also being an advocate for yourself. That's a type of advocacy. And there's so many different roles that people have in movements for advocacy, whether that's a personal movement for your own, you know, justice in a personal, you know, conflict or situation, or whether that's for a bigger group of people or things, because, you know, there's environmental advocacy and things like that. But I think that there's people who have the gift of being able to be on the front lines. And there's people who are able to be the person who is, you know, yelling at administration or, you know, saying what they need to say to the people who need to hear it in a very impactful and like gut punching way, I guess. You know, you need people who are like that. And then you also need people who are doing more of the planning, doing the more of the organizing. You need the communicators who are sending messages to each other about events or facilitating, you know, even if it's a roundtable discussion or even if it's like a talking circle, or, you know, you need those people who are, you know, able to communicate with others to bring those people in. And then there's people who their role is to be the ones who sit and pray. And they're the people who, you know, in our culture, we lay a same or tobacco. When we're praying, we also lay other medicines, but there are people who are praying for you who you can't even see in here. And there's people who are absolutely rooting for you who you can't physically see, you can't physically hear. You might not have even ever met them. Or you might be in a conflict with them. Or you might not have talked to them in a while. There are people out there who are laying that same out, or they're praying for you in whatever way that they do it, or they're sending good energy to you. There are people who are doing that. And I think in a lot of advocacy, that's definitely a strategy too. And that's definitely a very powerful thing. And if it weren't for having all the people that I have had in my life doing that for me in times where I was really struggling, I don't think I'd be where I am today.
It really struck me when you said that there's people praying for you that you might not realize. Like, two things came to my mind. So when I used to walk around MSU's campus, especially if I was having a bad day, like I was feeling depressed that day, I would walk down the street and I would literally picture a little string going from my heart to the person walking by me to like all the people I saw and just like send them love. I'd see like the energy, like white light going out of my chest and going into theirs. And I would be praying for them, and I would just say, like, God, please, like, help their dreams come true. Help them have a good day. Help them know that they're loved. And it would make me feel so much less alone. And I never told anybody about that back then. But I promise you, every time I did that, my day would turn around. And then the second thing that came to my mind when you said that was, I'm 100% Italian, and I had never been to Sicily until summer of 2022. For some reason, my dad never told me we had family over there. And I showed up at their doorstep, and I was like, hello, my name is Lauren LaGrasso. I think I'm your cousin. And they rushed down, and Roxy, they had been waiting for us all that time. One of my cousins wrote down, this moment has been awaited for 70 years. Like, they had been dreaming of us and praying for us all that time.
That is so sweet.
Yeah, but like, this is just an example of what you're saying. Like, my whole life, I had people wishing me well and praying for me. Like, just my existence was literally somebody else's dream. And I really believe there's a version of that for all of us. That's why what you just said is so powerful.
Exactly. That's crazy that you say that, because you know why I mentioned that?
Tell me.
Because I grew up in foster care and grew up, you know, not connected with my mom's side of the family, I got to know really nothing about them. So most of the things that I've learned about my family, especially my mom's side, it sounds really sad, but it's true. I've had to learn through obituaries.
Yeah.
Just to know about who was who. Like, I think we should, you know, really, really start thinking more critically about praying for people who have hurt us. Every single person in the world, even the nicest person you have ever met in your entire life, has hurt someone. Even if it was in kindergarten, like, yeah, even if it was like true. They were a child, they have hurt someone's feelings, they have hurt someone, and that doesn't make it okay to continue to hurt people. But I think once you like start realizing that and realizing, oh shit, like I have hurt people before,
yeah,
you know, because you have to forgive yourself, because you're not going to live if you don't. You really do. So then if you're like, okay, well, I'm going to forgive myself for the pain that I've caused others, how am I aligned with my morals towards other people hurting people, right? What helped me when I was, you know, hurting people, and what helped me get out of that was all the amazing people who had their distance from me and were laying their same down for me and were praying for me. And it's not necessarily that, you know, they were always thinking about me and always, you know, had me in their thoughts and were always praying for me. It's just when they, you know, had thought about me and it popped up in their head, they pray for me and then they move on with their day, right? And so that's how I can move with my mom. I can, you know, pray that she finds courage. I can pray that she heals, and then I can move on with my day. And so for the past like 4 years since I've been in college, we get like Ancestry, go on Ancestry and like look up our family trees and stuff like that. And so when I got student access, I was like, let me find my family. And so I started doing a lot of digging, and then I finally found my mom's side of the family. I finally found out my grandfather's name. That's her dad. And then later I found out my mom's sister's names. I had been searching on Facebook for these people for years. And then last year, I finally found my aunt on Facebook. And I had thought for months, do I add this person or do I not add this person? Like, I don't know what the vibe is. I don't know if they're close to my mom. I don't know anything. I know that they don't live in Michigan. Like, they're out, like, in New Mexico. But I was like, well, I've lived 21 years of my life without these people, and if they end up being weird or whatever,
you'll be fine.
I can always, you know, exactly. And I have other support, so I'm not just going to put my all into it, right? So I added her on Facebook, and then I had been friends with her for a year, because I was like, it doesn't mean I have to message her, right? But I had her on Facebook, and sometimes she would like heart my post or like my post, but never really say anything. And then one day I was having like a little brunch, like Zoom call with one of my aunties, like community aunties. She's so amazing. I was just talking with her and like catching up with her about life. And I started really thinking about the role that women have played in my life and women like her have played in my life. And then I was like, you know what? I think today is the day I'm going to message my aunt. So I messaged my aunt on Facebook, and I was like, I don't know if you know me. I don't know if you've ever heard of me. I don't know if you know my mother. I don't know how much you know about any of this, but I think I'm your niece, and I'm sorry that this is messages on Facebook. You know, I was like, this what is can kind you of do? A weird message for Facebook. Yeah, I was like, and I just wanted to say hi. I just wanted to reach out. And I kid you not, it's so similar to your story. She sent me a whole paragraph saying that she has proudly been my aunt since the day I was born.
and that she has been rooting for me my whole life. And she had always wanted to know, you know, how I was doing. She starts asking me all these questions about my siblings. And then one of my siblings, he's trans. And I started telling her about that. And some of his family is not very supportive of that. And I mean, in the Upper Peninsula, a lot of it's very conservative up there. And I told her about that. And she goes, oh my God, I'm queer and all your cousins are queer. I'm so glad he can live his truth now.
Wow.
And I'm also queer. I'm bisexual. I've been out since I was like 11 and I was very much bullied. I was like one of the first people in like my middle school to come out and I was really bullied for it. And so hearing that healed a part of me and I was just like, wow. And yeah, I just bawled. And she told me she was proud of me for maintaining our culture too. And she was like, you know, I didn't grow up, you know, over in Michigan or over in the Midwest or Great Lakes area where, you know, our people are from. So I'm a little disconnected too. And I would like love to be able to learn that from you. And like, if you ever wanted to share that. And then here's where it's crazy.
No, you're not make me cry more.
Yeah, I will because it's crazy. I've been like freaking out all week about it. So the past few months I've been talking with her on and off and just learning things. And then my grandfather. My Ojibwe grandfather messaged me for the first time in my whole life, randomly on a Monday, and then tells me how him and my grandma met. And so like now I'm like understanding, like now I'm like, oh my goodness, like this is all like making sense. I'm understanding my family now. Like I never knew.
So that grandfather is not the former spouse or spouse of the woman who raised you, your grandmother.
No. This is my mom's dad. Because I never knew much about my mom. She lied to me about his name. And like, it was like a whole thing. And then he starts telling me all this stuff. It was crazy. One night, randomly, on a Friday night, at like 11 p.m., midnight, my aunt, who I just started like kind of connecting with, sends me this message saying, you know, she was like, your mom told me a long time ago that your older brother's autistic. And I just wanted to say, I hope he's doing well. Our whole family are either autistic, have ADHD, or both. I just want to say that I am so proud of your brother and like that, you know, it's a beautiful gift to be able to be neurodivergent. It's truly a gift. And she said that to me. I started bawling because this past year I was diagnosed with ADHD. And I was like, oh my God, like finally, because a lot of those things growing up, like it was viewed as like a bad thing, like the way I tell stories and like the way I go on and on about things and all that stuff, it was looked upon as a bad thing. Like I used to be really insecure about it. And so when she told me that, I just started bawling my eyes out. And then here's where it gets extremely crazy. This Wednesday, I get a text. So I'm a fellow for the Center for Native American Youth for the Building Communities of Hope Fellowship, which is a fellowship for former Native foster youth who want to reform the foster care system. And I get this email from them asking me if I want to go on a fellowship meeting conference thing in New Mexico, in Albuquerque. And I was like, what? And I first like kind of glanced at the email and I was like, oh, this is going to be during my graduation week. Like, I don't know. And then I look at it. It is April 30th, which is 3 days after I graduate. So I messaged my aunt. Guess whose family lives in Albuquerque?
Hers.
Yes, literally my family lives in Albuquerque. And she was like, oh my God, I'm literally clearing my schedule. I can't wait to see you. She's like creating an itinerary. She's like sending me all these things. And that's happening right after I graduate.
Wow, what a beautiful gift.
Exactly. And it's like, wow. And so when you're sharing your story about your family and like showing up there and then being like, we have been waiting for you, that is like a feeling I cannot describe to people. But that shows it too. And that's one of the things that I learned from my aunt. She has been praying for me for all these years. Imagine all the other people who might have been doing that too.
Who still are, that you haven't met yet. Or random strangers on the street that might be praying for you. That is what I love about your way of being. I love that you say, like, this part of your bio makes me cry when you talk about, like, I'm really working to balance my advocacy work around love, like feeling the anger that I feel, but also leading with love. Because I think that's such a piece that's missing from so many conversations around changing the world. It's like, yeah, feel that anger. But also if we can't do it from love, like it's not going to last.
Absolutely. And I think in some cultures, they view anger with a bad light. And I question how much of that has to do with colonization and how much to do with colonialism and all of those things. I had a conversation back in October. It was also for one of my fellowship. It was my fellowship orientation in Minneapolis. And we were talking about these things. And I was getting emotional and I was talking about it too. And I was like, how do I balance like the anger and feeling love? And everyone who was in that room, which was mostly Native people, they all were like, they don't like exist separately. Like the reason why we get so angry, quote unquote, about these things is because we are filled with so much love for our community, for with our family, with ourselves, with our people, you know, for other people. That's why we feel that anger. And it's not necessarily anger. It's like a drive. It's a passion. It's that. And so that changed my life. And I was like bawling my eyes out. I was like crying. I was like, what? I was like, that's so true. And then I started to realize that is exactly what all my aunties and all the people in my life have been trying to teach me this whole time. And I also think, and this is one of my like sayings, like
yes, one of my mottos, give us really. Your Roxyism.
Yes, my Roxyism. So one of mine is that nothing ever happens if someone isn't frustrated. Like, truly think about it. Like, do you think MLK wasn't frustrated? Like, do you know what I mean? Like, nothing has ever happened if somebody wasn't frustrated. But, you know, he was filled with love for his community, right? And a lot of our activists and advocates, they're filled with love for their community. And they're frustrated. And they're, quote unquote, angry. But it's because they love their community and they want these things so badly for the community that needs it, right? And we can feel that way for ourselves too in our own self-advocacy. And that's why we should do the things that bring us joy. You know what I mean?
It's true, because what you're saying, it's basically like you see that the world and life could be and should be more beautiful than it is. And it's like that anger and anguish over the disparity between what you know it could and should be and what it is. And I actually think the only way to fill in that gap is through love, but also allowing the anger and anguish to exist. Like, the binary nature of the culture that we were raised in, like, it's not working. It's breaking. And so, yeah, like, the only way to fill in the gap is to let these things coexist and to influence each other.
Exactly. And to not shame yourself when you do feel angry. I think that's another thing that a lot of women feel.
Yeah.
Is a sense of shame if they're, I like to call them loud energy women. I'm very much a loud energy woman. And I think there's other types of energy of other women. And that's totally fine. I just know that mine is loud.
Can I ask you a question about that? So I don't know if I feel shame over being angry. I feel scared when I'm angry. I feel scared that I might hurt someone else, that I might be alienated, that I might be outcast. And maybe there is shame involved in that. But like, how would you advise, especially young women who are listening, who are dealing with feelings of either shame or fear over their own anger and frustration, on how to move through that and build acceptance around it?
The first thing is truly finding someone who vibes with you the way you vibe with them. I started thinking that I was clinically nuts. Like, I thought I was like actually going crazy. And I had this feeling like any space that I was in, I felt like I was the craziest person in the room. And so I was like, okay, I can't talk about this issue, or I can't talk about this, or I have to tone down here. And I started like, it was a whole battle in my heart.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to feel that way anymore. And the first way that I stopped feeling that way was by surrounding myself with people who value those traits about myself, right? So once you know those traits about yourself, do that exercise I talked about earlier. And then once you find those things, be around people who support those things about you and would be up there. You know, it's like your best friend who's like up there, like fighting with the people who are saying like, oh.
My best friend, Roxy, you.
Yes. But like, be friends with people who would like go to bat for that trait that you have. Like,
right.
People who will go to bat, be like, no, she's one of the most courageous people I've ever met, but you're allowed to go walk away. Surround yourself with people like that. And then internally, it's a lot to work through shame. It's a lot to work through feeling like you need to douse your own fire for other people. But also remember, you don't have to be perfect. There's so many different parts of the journey, and there's going to be moments, and that's fine. Yeah. Like, that's literally so fine. I mean, if it gets to a point where you like, you know, need to talk to somebody, absolutely. But it's okay to just exist some days. But you also know that you want to feel joy And by continuing to put yourself in situations, because we do have agency with who we hang around, whether that's a friend or whether, you know, that's, you know, we're in our adulthood and it's a family member or whatever, we have that agency, reminding yourself that you do have that agency too. I would also say when dealing with like feeling shame about being angry, especially as a woman, realizing all of the systemic barriers that we have had as women and realizing like a lot of it isn't just us. And it's okay to just exist the way we exist. I think it's totally fine to be, you know, a loud energy woman. And it's totally good to be a quieter energy woman who kind of glides her way into a space and, you know, doesn't talk as much. And you need both of those types of, you know, women in your life. You really do. And if you fall more one way or the other way, that's totally fine. You have to be around people who support that part of you.
Right.
You know, and don't try to change it. If you want to be a loud, outspoken person, you know, start being that way and be around people who support that. But if you, you know, are more of a quieter person, that's totally fine too. Be around people who support that instead of, you know, making you drain all your energy, you know, trying to be extroverted, you know? Because one thing that I was taught like over the past like year, I was taught this last year by one of my professors. I was like really struggling in one of my classes, mostly because of the content of the class. It wasn't like necessarily the assignment. It was like just reading like hard historical trauma type thing.
And tell people what you're studying, because I think that's important context.
Oh yeah. I am a social work major. I'm graduating at the end of this month. And I'm minoring in Indigenous Studies and Race and Ethnicity in the United States. And this class I'm talking about was one of my race and ethnicity classes. It was my capstone class. And I was taking it last year, and I stayed after class to talk with my professor, and I was just like crying. I was like, how do you like teach these things and like continue learning about these things and experiencing them? Like, how do you balance all of that and still like just be able to think about getting your duties done and like your daily responsibilities? How do you like balance all that? Because I feel like I'm starting to go a little nuts. And he said to me, we had a really long talk, and he was like, you know, I was taught by somebody else that women of color waste time every single day. And he just said it for a second, and then I thought about it, and I was like, interesting. And he was like, I would say even broader than just women of color, but even broader than that, we waste time every single day, whether that's doing, you know, the unpaid DEI work that we do in educational settings or workplace settings or whatever it is, whether it's doing all that unpaid work and we're doing all this time answering, you know, inappropriate questions, and then, you know, dealing with, you know, as women, catcalling, those types of things, dealing with all those things. And those things take actual seconds, minutes, hours, literal tangible time out of our day that could have been spent towards ourselves and our families and uplifting our communities. And I started thinking about that after that conversation, because I was like, wow. And I started thinking about that. And I was like, how much of my day do I spend thinking badly about people? Like having to like play the token Indian or whatever, you know? How much of my time, like literally of my day, do I do that? And I started realizing, I was like, oh my God, this is actually taking, you know, 5 minutes out of my day that I could have spent longer on like my self-care routine in the morning. You know, it's literally taking that 5 minutes of time out of my day where I could have been doing this. And so I started to really try to be more intentional, because when you're surrounding yourself around the wrong people, you are truly wasting your literal time that you have agency over, because you truly have agency over your life. Time is a construct, yes. But like in the construct that has been built for us, the time is existing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's a construct. But like until we all are like, we're not going with this construct anymore, we got to live with it. So it's like either we all like get together across the whole world and make an agreement, or we got to start making different choices. So, okay, Roxy, I want to just get into some of your greatest hits so far, which I can't believe you're only 21. But tell me about the work you did when you were in high school to change the offensive mascot.
So when I was 17, I participated in the national speech competition where you give like a, I think like 3 to 5 minute speech about the issue that you think is the most pressing issue in the United States. When I was a senior in high school, I gave my speech. It was called Moving Beyond Whitewashed History. I've always been very into poetry and like that type of thing. And so when I gave my speech, it was kind of more of a poem than a speech, but I incorporated like facts and data and that type of thing in it. It was pretty much about how the misrepresentation and lack of representation of people of color leads to systemic barriers that we experience and also stereotyping. And I had alluded to my high school mascot at the time, which was the Redman. I had alluded to the Redman in my speech. I had won the competition, which meant that I could go to Washington, D.C., which COVID ended up happening, so we did it virtually. yeah, and when I gave that speech, the whole community pretty much like blew up about it. And like I said, I'm from the Upper Peninsula, which is pretty conservative. And so a lot of the reaction I received was awful. I was put on 2 different hit lists at minimum. I don't even know how many there were, but I was put on at least 2 different hit lists. There were group chats by grown adults with like kids who I went to school with who were talking about me, posting things about me that weren't true, posting things about my family that weren't true, that were just fully racist. At one point at a school board meeting, one of the people in the market community made this whole like awful public comment about how I'm a suicide bomber. Like, that's literally what this person in the community said. It was so messed up. And I was 17 sitting in the audience. Like, you're kidding. The people who were like sitting around me and like supporting me at that meeting, they cut his time's up, like cut him off. Like, he can't be saying this. And the president of the school board at the time said, and I quote, "He has the right to say whatever he wants to say." And over 40 people gave public comment that night. And he wasn't the only person who made a targeted comment about me. There's another woman who started harassing me after that. It was a whole crazy situation, which now, thankfully, 4 years later, they finally changed their mascot.
But you were instrumental in that change happening, right?
I would say so, yeah. Back in like the 90s, there was a similar movement to try to change the mascot. There was even a federal lawsuit that was filed against the school district to change the mascot. It was a pretty similar reaction, mind you, with like without the social media aspect. So there's actually a lot more in-person threats and that type of thing happening. It was awful. And then they didn't change it. And then 20 years later in 2020, I didn't necessarily start the conversation because there are other Native students who are there who had been talking about it. And I just literally mentioned the word Redman in my speech. And then people took that and ran with it. And it became a whole thing. You know, that was like one of the first things in terms of advocacy that I had done.
Wow. And when you were going through all that, like you said, you were just like a 17-year-old girl who was trying to state something that was very obvious and, you know, stand up for herself and her community. How did you take care of yourself while all that was happening?
Once again, I left the spaces that I didn't feel comfortable in. So one of them, I was very, very active in band. One day I wanted to go to a cultural event that's happening in the community. And I told my band director at the time that. And he got upset at me and was like, "You can't go." That really bothered me because I should be allowed to go practice my, you know, religious rights as an American Indian person, like the Native American Religious Freedom Act. But I left that space because I wasn't comfortable in it anymore. And then I started going to more community events and like really talking with the community. And there were a lot of people who really had their arms held open for me, which I will always hold those people in my heart. I was asked to speak at the Unitarian Universalist congregation, which I don't know anything about Christianity, if I'm being honest. And there's no shade to it or anything. Yeah. I just don't know anything about it.
I think Unitarian is like one of the most open parts of
Yeah, that's what I found out. And they asked me to speak for like a community day. And I was like, okay. And they asked me to do my speech. They asked me to do it for the youth. And I was like, oh my God, sure. And so I went and I was like shocked at like how open they were. I was like, this is so wild. And then I went up and gave my speech and there are like little kids that are sitting behind me and they're all were like between 2 and 4 years old.
Little kids.
Yeah. I was like about to cry. It was so cute. And then they got the opportunity to ask me questions. And the person who had invited me, she had told me that they had been learning about me and like learning about community advocacy and like learning about Native history all week. And so she was like, now they have a couple questions. And one of the kids asked me like, how old are you? And that was like the only question they had. I thought it was so cute. And then after that, she gives me this crystal. And she was like, this is a gift from all the kids. They put all their energy into this crystal for you. And it's like one of those little sun catcher things. I still have it. It was one of the sweetest things ever. I cherish it. It's just so cute. it was like things like that, like people who are like inviting me to those spaces to sit with community and like talk with community and do those types of things that like really helped me. And then I also really started getting more into beading during that time. I made my first pair of beaded earrings during that time. And then one of my friends ended up giving me like a bunch of beads. My aunt gave me beads because she had a bunch that were sitting in her office. And I really started to get creative. And that helped me so much. When I bead and when I do things like that, mostly when I bead, it is such a tedious process that requires so much patience that when I'm doing it, it's like, I can't even describe it. It's like it's definitely a spiritual experience for me. I don't even like feel like I'm thinking of like anything, but I'm thinking of everything at the same time.
Yeah, that's called creative flow. And I know when, you know, you and I talked before this, you mentioned your creativity is one of the main ways you reconnect to your culture. Because I feel like that sometimes, I think we talked about this, when I'm making like tomato sauce and I'm physically like crushing the tomatoes with my hands, like something about it makes me almost feel like the full generational line. Like something is so comforting about knowing that like my ancestors 200 years ago were doing the same thing that I'm doing right now, crushing the tomatoes with my hands. What is it for you that when you do beading, when you're in a dancing circle, when, you know, you do these different creative outlets that are tied to your culture, that heals you and connects you to that line?
So beading is definitely one of those things for me. I know that my mom does beadwork. I don't know anyone in her side of the family. I don't know if any of them do, but I know that she used to do beadwork. And so when I work with quills, it feels like one of those ways where I can like connect with her because she would make quill stuff, like stuff with porcupine quills. So that's one way that I feel like, you know, connected to that, even if like I'm not close with her or anything, like it's still one of those ways where I continue to pray. Because here's another thing, like when it comes to family that we have, you know, issues with or an intergenerational trauma in general, we know, for example, I carry the trauma that my mom has experienced, right?
Right.
And she carries the trauma that her parents have experienced and so on and so on. And so in order to like undo or fix the scars that, you know, our bloodlines have experienced, I'm working so that I'm not going to continue to inflict the pain onto my future kids, right?
Right.
So they'll be closer to a healed generation in my bloodline. I would say doing quill work makes me feel that way and like helps me with that. I would say that beading helps me with that. And then this weekend we've been sewing, which is definitely more of a contemporary thing, but it makes me feel like that because my grandma that I grew up with, she was a seamstress for a while. And so it's nice to be able to connect with that. And then poetry too. Poetry is, for me, has always been a place where I can like find my voice. And I like telling stories and I like being able to do that through poetry, even if I'm the only person who understands it. And then recently, over the past like 4 years, I've started getting into the powwow circle. So I started dancing. And one of the things that I was taught when I first started dancing was that every step you take when you dance is like a release of the trauma. It's like one trauma that doesn't have to be held on to anymore.
I love that image. Like literally picturing it going into the ground.
And then it like dissipates almost.
Yeah. Like the earth holds it for you and then like releases it somewhere.
And that is exactly like how I feel when I'm able to engage in these things. And that is 100% how I feel when I'm dancing. Because I feel like a lot of the time when we're starting to become creative or we want to engage in crafts or whatever, you don't even have to be native for it. But once you like want to start doing these like creative endeavors that you have, I feel like a lot of people get that like imposter syndrome about it, or they get this feeling like, oh my God, it's not going to be good. It's not going to be this. It's not going to be that. First of all, one thing that I was taught both by my social worker that I had when I was younger about flowers not being perfect, I learned it again when I started beading. I heard that when we bead, we have to, the mistakes that are in our beadwork, they're called spirit beads. And they're supposed to be there. And it shows that we're not perfect beings. And it's an act of a humility, really. And so when we're in those like learning stages, those are the most beautiful parts of the project.
So many of us, like, we give up on our creativity because we make a mistake like that, you know? Like, oh, I'm not playing this guitar note exactly right, so I don't have a right to keep playing. But if we could look at it as something beautiful, like you said, spirit beads, right? Like that's part of our process. That's like how we're getting to wherever we'll go. And the grace that that idea gives us would allow us all to keep blossoming instead of just like giving up and turning around and walking away from this vital part of ourselves.
Exactly. And once I started learning these like smaller teachings from people who are helping guide me, I started realize like these are the things I need to hold true with me. And when I was growing up, I loved dancing. I loved gymnastics. When I was younger, my grandma pulled me out of gymnastics, which made me really sad because I wanted to continue doing gymnastics. And she also made a comment when I was younger because I had baby weight. You know what I mean? I was a little kid, and that's totally fine. If you're a little kid and you have baby weight, that's totally fine. Bodies literally change, fluctuate throughout your entire life. But when I was little, like, I used to be so insecure about that. And my grandma made a comment about the way my arms looked when I ran. And that fucked with me. And then I always was super self-conscious about my body. I didn't want to move anymore. And it wasn't until I found power dancing that I started to reclaim movement in my life, which has really been powerful. Because every time I take a step, it doesn't necessarily matter how perfect I look. It doesn't matter that. It matters that I'm praying, because that's what these dances are for.
And you're redefining your relationship to your body, it sounds like. It sounds like you're...
Exactly.
You're acknowledging that you have a relationship to your body. I don't know. I've been thinking about that a lot over the past year and a half because I have a lot of stuff with body too. Yeah, just like being in a relationship with your body is so important. Hi, creative. If you love the show and it has meant a lot to you, think about sharing it with your friends, family, and anyone you think would love to hear it. Podcasts are spread person to person, and I know the number one influencers in my life are my friends and family. So if you know someone who would love it, you can think about passing it along. Unleash Your Inner Creative can be found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. New episodes drop every Wednesday in the Unleash podcast feed. Remember, during the month of April, you can also listen to Unleash on the Impact 89 FM on Wednesdays live from 12 to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Okay, now back to the podcast. So we talked about like how advocacy is inherently creative because you're envisioning a more beautiful future. What is the most beautiful future you could imagine moving forward for your people?
One in which we support each other and maintain the traditions that we've had for thousands of years, and one in which we're being taught and learning our language and learning about the traditional relationships that we have had with all the beings around us. That is my vision, which is very broad, and it's purposefully broad because the world will never look how it looked before the apocalypse or before colonization. And colonization for indigenous people is the apocalypse. We've already experienced that. And so we live in a post-apocalyptic world. And I don't know how possible it is with all of the globalization that has happened over the past, 100 plus years, that we'll ever be able to return to our most traditional ways. But I hope that we can continue to maintain those things that keep us connected to ourselves, right? Whether that's ceremony, whether that's, dances, whether that's, our art forms, whether that's the way we talk with each other, whether that's the way we hold space with each other, conflict resolution, our languages, our relationship to the earth, the relationship with medicines, all of that. And it'll look different because, again, like I said, post-apocalyptic world, and it's not my place to say what it's going to look like exactly, but that's what I hope for. I also hope for, since I'm very passionate about mostly working with youth, I hope that there is never a kid ever again who is in the foster care system. Doesn't matter if they're Native or not, but I hope there is never again a kid in the foster care system. And I hope that as soon as possible, really, for me particular, in my community, I hope all the Native kids who are in foster care, they feel that cultural support, they feel that support and that love from their community, their Native community, and they have people who are guiding them towards that. I also hope that people continue to heal from all of the things that have hurt them in their life and in their bloodline. Because here's something I've been thinking about a lot. I've mentioned agency a lot, but when we talk about things like addiction or talk about like those harder topics, mental health and substance use, those types of things in our communities, one element is definitely intergenerational trauma. And it's very important to learn about that and how the, substances have impacted your family for generations. It definitely impacts your literal genes, but also can help you understand more about your own story. Once you do that, it's important to realize that you have control and you have agency over your life.
Yeah. And I wonder too, how can non-Indigenous people best support your vision? Like, how can someone like me or your fellow students who are not Indigenous support you in this vision of the most beautiful thing for your people?
Just leave space to listen. Leave space to hear what other people's experiences are and just really bask in it. Because it can be, you know, I understand it can be a little nerve-wracking meeting someone who's different from you. I think that's how we're wired as humans to be anyway. But understanding that it's okay to not know everything. One thing I've been talking a lot lately with my boss actually is the difference between cultural competency and cultural humility.
Oh, that's good.
Yes. And so cultural competency is like kind of like the mindset where like, I need to know all these things about this group that I'm working with or that kind of thing. But cultural humility is like, I am not going to know everything and I am okay with not knowing anything. So I'm going to ask questions in an appropriate way when it is necessary. And I'm going to listen and be respectful because I don't know these things. And it's good for me to learn anyway. Instead of coming in at it being like, oh, I know all this about your people. Or like, I know X, Y, Z about this thing, you know? Just sitting back and being like, oh, wow. And then thanking people for teaching you about either their lived experience or cultural teachings or anything like that. Or history, even. Thanking people for sharing that space with you is very important. So those are the things that I would say.
Those are great things. I think that's so beautiful to hear too, because I really think the reason people do that isn't because they're trying to be like, I know so much about your life. It's more like they don't want to offend and they want to be supportive, but there is a way to ask a question that is not offensive and showing that humility. And it's a fine line, but it's like, yeah, build enough knowledge and competency so that you can ask the questions that you need to ask, basically, from a humble place and from a place that allows a person to tell you about their lived experience versus assuming you know.
Yes.
Okay. Why MSU to do this work? I want to know why you decided to go to Michigan State to do this incredible work that you're doing and continue your journey.
That's a great question. So the first thing was that there's not many schools, at least in Michigan, that have a bachelor's of social work like program. Second thing is most of the social workers that I knew in my life had some social work degree from MSU. So I was like, okay, this like makes sense. And then third, I needed to get out of the Upper Peninsula. I think that's another thing that a lot of people, I encourage a lot of people to adventure and like do things that scare them a little. One of the main reasons why I went here was I received the STAR scholarship, which I don't know if you've ever heard of it. Yeah, it was an absolutely amazing scholarship that like I literally could not pass up. Yeah, that's one of the reasons why I went to MSU, and it has been amazing. And I'm so grateful to have had that scholarship all 4 years. Like literally the people I have met from that, like literally some of my absolute soulmates, like people that I will always like hold in my heart. And then the mentorship and support I have gotten from our advisors through the program has been amazing. So that's why I'm going to MSU. But I will be a Wolverine in a few weeks.
Oh my gosh. I guess I'd like to end with this. You know, you in your bio, one of the first things it states is that you're a proud citizen of the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians. What makes you so proud or most proud to be a citizen of the Red Cliff Band? And what would you like people listening to know about the Red Cliff Band of Lake Superior Chippewa Indians?
So I grew up away from my specific tribal community. So I grew up with other Ojibwe people around, but from different Ojibwe bands or tribes. And it wasn't until I was 18 that I actually finally went back to my homeland. And I've, over the past few years, have been starting to reconnect more with people who are from there. And one thing that I have learned over the past few years is just how passionate my community is about Indian child welfare. They're always active in those cases and always are, you know, rooting for the kids and protecting kids. So I know my community is very, very like passionate about that, which is another thing. I never knew them and they were rooting for me.
It's the people and the stories and the culture and reconnecting to that piece of yourself that was always calling you. Roxy, you are a delight, a bold, courageous, inspiring, righteously angry and loving woman. And I'm so grateful for you just being who you are, allowing us all to step a little bit more toward ourselves, to acknowledge all the pain and the beauty of our lives, of our pasts, and try to make the future more beautiful. And I just want to thank you for being here. And most importantly, thank you for being you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thank you for being you too. And just know you got me rooting for you. Even if you can't see or hear me, you know it. And you know your people are too.
And wait, before we go, I want to say your Ojibwe name, right?
Bejigo Nodenkwe.
Bejigo Nodenkwe, also known as Roxy.
Yes.
Thank you. Thank you for listening, and thanks to my guest, Roxy Sproul. For more info on Roxy, she can be found on LinkedIn at Roxy Sproul. And again, thank you. If you like what you heard today and want to support the show, Unleash Your Inner Creative can be rated, reviewed, and found on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. It's also great to share the show with a friend and post about it on social media. You can find me at Lauren LaGrasso and at Unleash Your Inner Creative on all social platforms. Thank you to Rachel Fulton for editing and associate producing this episode. You can find her at Rachel M. Fulton. Thanks to Liz Full for the show's theme music. Follow her at Liz Full. My wish for you this week is that you find the courage to embrace every part of your story with love and strength. I hope that you're inspired to seek healing, understanding, and the joy of reconnecting with your roots, whatever they may be. I love you, and I believe in you. Talk with you next week.